welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our multi-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul.
Well, hello, Susan. It's been a while. It's good to be back with you, especially since today's show features Story City, my hometown.
Yes, Story City and Roland. But whoever's hometown it is, it's a good time to be in Iowa because it feels like spring is finally with us.
Yes, and all the times I've driven down here for the 7 o'clock show in the winter, it was dark. Today I didn't have to hit any deer because it was light. And I wore a light jacket, so we must be into some kind of change here.
Yes, I think it's a little maybe risky to do more than say it's a lovely morning today. I'm really looking forward to the guests you have to tell us about because there have been some big changes in Story City. Who do we have first with us?
Well, Susan, first we're going to hear from Abby Huff, the new executive director of the Greater Chamber Connection, and that's in Story City, followed by Todd Thorson. He's the owner of the Story City Grand Opera House, announcing today its full conversion to digital programming. We've been talking about that for a while, and now it's a fait accompli.
That's right. But before we get started, I want to be sure to let people know that later in the program, we'll hear from the singer-songwriter DeLon Thompson, former Roland resident, who was the subject of a front-page story in the Story City Herald a couple of weeks ago. But now we've got Abby with us.
I hope that Abby's there. Abby, are you there?
I am.
Well, welcome to KHOI. You know, this is a Story City / Ames radio station, so you're on your home station and your home turf. Now tell me, you've just begun your responsibilities there at the chamber. How does it feel to have a brand new job?
Oh, it's great. Story City is very welcoming, great community to end up in. And I'm just jumping right in, and we've got great things happening.
Well, you know, we had to have you on first today because you told me right off the top that you have a 7:30 meeting. Your day begins early today, right?
Yes, yes. We have four committees as part of our Main Street, because we're a Main Street partner. So I have a 7:30 meeting with my organization committee, and we are going to talk about duck race and a golf tournament.
Very good. Now, you've got a big event coming off very early in your tenure. We have Scandinavian Days coming up in June.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what's going to be happening.
Yeah. Well, Scandinavian Days, the chamber office, we are kind of the support for this group of locals who volunteer every year to put on a great festival. So this year, they're working on kind of jazzing it up a little bit. We've got a bigger parade. We've got a fairly big craft show. We've got about 25 vendors confirmed right now. We've got laser tag. We have a carnival. Of course, our carousel is open all weekend. It's a great time to jump on that and take a ride on our 1913 carousel. Heritage Hall is open. They're going to be educating everybody on all things Scandinavian. There'll be Little Mister contests. There'll be so much. It's so much going on that first weekend.
Well, we have also the Bill Riley Talent Show.
Yes.
And I'm involved in that. I'm either the judge or the MC, depending on whether Bill Riley comes or not. But we have an excellent show there. In fact, several years, the top three contestants have been from our show that finished 1, 2, 3 in the state fair competition. So we have very good kids and young people coming to that show.
Yeah.
Now tell us, what are the dates for that Scandinavian Days? That's first weekend in June, isn't it?
First weekend in June. It's actually 3 days. In the past it's been 2 days, but we've got so much going on we had to add a third day. So it's the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of June, so the Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
So everyone can mark their calendars right now.
Yes.
Now, Abby, give us a little rundown on your background. What did you do before you took this job?
Oh, well, I grew up in Iowa. I am a native Iowan. I grew up in Algona. So So that's just north of Fort Dodge for anybody that does not know where that is. And I went to UNI. My undergrad is in interior design. And when I graduated in 2010, I moved to Cedar Rapids. I worked for about 10 months for a company and then decided that I wanted to do more freelance design. So I did that for about 2 years. I was living in Cedar Rapids in the Nubo neighborhood. If anybody's ever been there, it's a great neighborhood. It was after the 2008 flood, it was completely wiped out and devastated. And again, a small group of volunteers said, you know what, we want to keep this neighborhood alive. We want to bring it back. We want it to be what it was when artists like Grant Wood was, you know, would hang out there and do some painting. So they really, while I was living there, they really built the community up, and I just admired what they were doing and decided, you know what, I think I want to go back to school and get my master's degree in historic preservation. So I moved across the country. I moved to Savannah, Georgia.
Wow.
And attended the Savannah College of Art and Design and got my Master's of Fine Arts in Historic Preservation. I graduated from there in May and then moved back to Iowa in September and just was looking for a job, and I wanted to work for a community that was a Main Street community because Main Street is all about preservation and keeping your Main Streets alive and, you know, getting people downtown to Main Streets. And so Story City had the opening, and they were a Main Street community, so it just worked out perfectly.
And you won the job fair and square, and the rest will be, as you say, history. And the Main Street program is also, I think, be happening in Ames, too, I think.
A lot of these cities.
And you might just give us a little thumbnail sketch of the Main Street program, what its theme is and how it works in Story City.
Yeah, well, Main Street Iowa is part of the Iowa Economics, and they're also a part of the National Main Street, which is under the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And each community kind of runs Main Street differently, but we all have things we have to abide by. So we each have to have these four committees, one devoted to business development or business improvement, one to the design of your Main Street, one to organizing, so that's kind of the raising of the funds. You know, our partnership is under organization. And then the last one is promotion, so promoting your Main Street, getting the word out there that we are a Main Street community. And that's kind of where we do our more fun activities. Hear about our, we have a new event in May coming up called Touch a Truck.
Now, what is that?
We are closing off Broad Street, which is our Main Street.
Okay.
And we are bringing in all day long, you know, our office is right on Broad Street. So all day long, I can see these big trucks coming up and down the street from our industry partners. And so I see it, the community sees it. So this is just the time we're going to stop those trucks. We're going to park them on Broad Street, and we're going to let people explore them, get up, be able to touch them, see how they work. Hopefully we're going to have some tractors. We're going to have all the first responders are going to be here. So fire truck, police car, ambulance, all going to be here. We're going to have the electric truck here, hopefully a big rig.
Sounds like everyone's going to learn a lot about things they see every day but don't know detail about.
Exactly.
So you're educating people. That's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Scandinavian Days, that really has been going on in Story City for years and years. And it began as the Sutna Mai celebration because that is that's the celebration in Norway when Norway got their independence from Sweden. And so there was a terrible fight there, you know. We threw kumla at each other. But we won our independence. And so in the old days, it was Sutna Mai, and it evolved into Scandinavian Days. And I think you're going to enjoy the whole process of Scandinavian Days because it not only celebrates that heritage, but also celebrates modern-day Story City and, by extension, small-town Iowa.
Yep.
Because we found out, Susan and I, in our travels, that every city has its own festival, the different theme. You have Sweet Corn Days down in Ada. You know, I could just rattle them off. Everyone has their own festival. So a lot of people are being creative about making their hometown visible and having an opportunity for people from outside to visit, enjoy, and help celebrate.
Story City is kind of the kickoff of the summer. You know, we're right there in that first weekend in June, and I think every weekend following, you can attend a festival in some town.
You betcha.
Yeah, you betcha. That's another Norwegian saying, and I'll tell you what. Maybe up in Algona, there's a Scandinavian population. Was that
there
true?
There is. There's a small Scandinavian population up there.
See, Norwegians and Swedes and Danes moved only where the snow flies into winter. So, you know, you can't be in a warm climate and be a Norski from originally. We have snowbirds, but they always come back to where it's cold.
Yep.
Well, I really hope you enjoy your tenure in Story City. And have you formulated some personal goals up there, things you want to accomplish that are sort of going to be your signature stuff going on there?
Yeah, well, it really is. I really want to focus on what we're doing on Main Street, kind of get back to those kind of Main Street roots and really just have Broad Street a great place to come down to, relax, and enjoy. And then, you know, we've got some great opportunities out by the interstate that I really am interested in kind of building that up and making us a stop, a tourism stop. So, you know, on I-35, you see the Story City signs and you say, oh, that looks like a great time. Let's pull off and then kind of draw people, you know, let them be out there, but also let them draw them down to Broad Street.
Well, you know, that's a very good idea. And Story City, as like many towns, has been fortunate to be right on the interstate highway. So you have a curious dichotomy of the type of businesses you have right there by the exit, and then downtown business district. And so there's sort of a two-pronged attack there to dealing with people who come in off the interstate. Some are just going to stop for gas and food. Others are going to venture down to see your carousel.
Yeah.
And one real recurring theme I see in looking around town is the growth of antique shops in Story City. How many do we have?
Yeah, five, and then, of course, we have the antique mall that's right there off the interstate.
Yeah, I heard great comments about the antique mall. There's a lot of vendors out there, so.
Yeah, it's packed. It's great. It's a big warehouse, but you can't tell. You walk in, and everything is, you know, there's vendors, anything you would want. I love it, me being the sort of history nerd that I am. I love just getting my hands on that kind of thing.
I do, too. You know, the only thing I don't save is toilet paper. So, I do enjoy that. And I live in the farmhouse I grew up in, so I have all my parents' stuff, all my stuff, and they began farming out there in 1930 with horses. So, I really have more stuff than I'll ever need. Maybe I ought to have a stall at the antique mall.
Yeah,
you know, and for a friend of mine brought his little boy out to sell popcorn for Scouts. And I gave him a tour of my house. When they got back in the car, he said, Dad, Paul lives in a museum. So I must live in a museum. Hey, Abby, I know you've got a meeting coming up. Welcome to Story City. Welcome to the position of director there at the Chamber Connection.
Thanks.
And we're looking forward to
talk to you guys soon. We're in the middle of the Story Festival planning, so that's also taking
I'm involved with that also. I'm a storyteller, so I'll see you directly with that, Abby.
That's amazing.
Well, you go to that 7:30 meeting feeling all kinds of momentum because you've been on KHOI this morning, okay?
Yes, yeah.
All right.
All right.
Well, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, now, Susan, don't we have interesting people? You know, with all of our touring and traveling and our road trips, Haven't we met some terrific folks over time?
Oh, yes, we have. But the thing that always amazes me is just how many interesting folks we have within our listening area or by connection. And we'll find out about that a little bit later. But the one that we're going to be talking to next is Todd Thorson,
right,
who wears two very important hats in Story City. He is the owner of the Story City Grand Opera House. Mm-hmm. And he also is the editor of the Story City Herald. But first, the Opera House is just had a very, very important upgrade. They went digital. And very interesting to me, they chose to have this big event on April 1st. I'm going to have to ask him, was there a reason for choosing April 1st?
That was April 1st, yeah.
In case anything went wrong. Well, I guess that Todd Thorson is with us right now. Are you, Todd?
I'm here.
Good morning, Todd. How are you?
Hi, Paul.
Good. Well, now, Susan, my co-host here, Susan Franson, she was asking why you had that opening. Was that the ribbon cutting on the 1st of April?
The GCC had a ribbon cutting for us for the new digital conversion that we did, because we were basically dark for 2 months. So they were kind enough to do a wonderful ribbon cutting for us to get back and going again.
But there was no method in your madness having it on April 1st.
No, I guess it wasn't an April Fool's joke. So,
well, actually, I have to confess that I was on scene for that ribbon cutting, and it was very well attended. And you did a fine job showing us around, and we had a demonstration on screen. And tell us about some of the things you put in addition, first of all, to that digital system, because you have a whole new sound, don't you, Todd?
Yeah, we put in a new digital projector, and as well as we replaced the old analog sound system too, and put in new digital sound. So we started the process back at the end of January, and got all the equipment ordered. Used a company out of Des Moines that has serviced my booth for many, many years, and even worked with Dick and Virgil Peterson before that. So it was kind of a no-brainer to go with Midwest Cinema down in Des Moines. So we got the equipment ordered and waited for it all to arrive, and then we got on the schedule, and it was all installed in the middle of March. So,
well, how many speakers do you have in that orchestra there? Actual area in the theater. They're just lined on the walls, aren't they?
Yeah, we put up 8 JBL speakers on the wall. There was old speakers there before. We basically replaced them with the same number. The 3 big JBL speakers are still behind the screen. We were able to still use those. And then we just all brought in new digital processors and digital amplifiers and stuff, and connected that all with the new digital projector. And so the old Century projector that was dated 1947 is in the corner of the projection booth. We're not going to get rid of that. It's going to kind of be a historic nostalgia piece that we're going to hang on to.
Oh, you should, because I did go up in the projection booth, and, you know, it's sort of a wonderful thing that the projection is still done through the same hole in the wall.
Yep, we didn't have to do any. The only thing was just basically all the wiring was still there. So
yeah, right. And you and the big old projector is against the wall, and then you have the old splicing table that I'm sure Virgil used to splice film.
Yeah,
it's just and the floor is original. And the projection booth itself was historic to me. And then outside in the balcony surrounding the projection booth, you have the last original seating from 1913, the hard surface wooden seating.
Yeah. They're still there.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know,
I've had a few people the last few weeks that tell me that I bet Virgil and Dick are looking down now, seeing some more progress.
Well, you know, it's such a wonderful story, your own personal story, because you grew up working in the theater, and Dick had so much confidence in you, and his family had run the theater since when? Right before World War II or after?
Dick was in the war, and his folks and Virgil came a year before after he got discharged. That was back in 1946.
Yeah.
And then Dick joined them a year later when he was discharged from the service. So, Yeah, they ran it from 1946 to 1983 when I took over. So.
Yeah, and Dick was a survivor of the first wave at Normandy Beachhead.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
Almost all his company was killed. I talked to Dick. In fact, and then, of course, Dick, he got the theater through the tribulation of the great television, you know, the onset of television. And Dick was able to maintain the theater because he also had a job at an insurance agency. And then he and Virgil ran the theater together. And I remember he really got the theater through hard times when a lot of other theaters closed. And then I view you as his heir apparent.
Yeah, I started working there, helping out in high school, and then went off to college. And, of course, my mom was running the newspaper, and I was helping there, too. And they approached me to buy the theater back in 1983, and I had a couple things already on my plate, and I said, why not? Just add it to the plate. So
I was
overjoyed that they wanted me to do that. They were, you know, they were two bachelors that didn't have any kids, and it was Virgil was the older one, and he was getting up there in years, and so they were happy to see that it would continue. So that was the main thing that Dick wanted to see, was to have it continue. So.
Yeah, this theater has been operating since 1913 without closing,
yeah.
And my mother saw silent films there.
Yep.
In fact, I know the seat she sat in because it's right by the pole that supports the balcony, and she talked about watching Rudolph Valentino in The Sheik. It was such a scandalous movie, you know, with a big famous kiss. But I grew up watching all the great movies there and meeting all the movie stars on screen, and it's a hallowed place for me and a labor of love for you.
Yeah, it was a pretty expensive venture to do this, but I didn't want to leave it on, you know, bad times or have it close or put the key in the door. So it was it needed to be done, and we, you know, a couple years ago we had our anniversary, and we had three or four live shows. I think we talked back then about all that, and we raised some money, and the community's been very supportive and encouraging to me. You know, I'm 55 years old, so, you know, you're supposed to be trying to get out of debt when you get to age.
And here you are going into
more debt. But what else am I going to do? You know, I've been born and raised in Story City. I love Story City, and so it was a no-brainer to do this.
Well, Susan and I were just talking earlier that small town Iowa has a lot of people making personal lifetime investments in the good of the community, and certainly you fit that description. And, you know, as you've told me, there was very little wiggle room because Hollywood is not really sending out 35-millimeter film anymore, are they?
No, I went as long as I could, probably longer than I should have, but there was one or two film companies that were very still cooperative with me. It almost appeared like they were making a 35-millimeter just for the Story Theater in Story City. Universal was one of them, and when it came time, it was around the end of the year, and, you know, last year, and toward Christmas and the holidays, and that's when it really pretty much was shut down. I had always kind of had it in the back of my mind that we would probably do this sometime in the winter, just because it's a good time to do it. People sometimes don't come out anyway, so it was a good time to do it, and we were closed a little longer than I thought we would be. Midwest Cinema is busy all over the five-state area, fixing up theaters and putting new theaters in, and so we had to work around them a little bit, but they were here for about 4 days. It took about 4 days to get it all installed, and it's quite the system. It's pretty impressive, and the comments, and everybody's been very impressed with the brightness of the picture and the crispness of the sound, and it's pretty extraordinary.
Well, you know, one thing, too, you covered during the ribbon cutting was the new flexibility it gives you, because now you can show so many different things on the screen. You mentioned that it would even be a place where you could hold business meetings and play DVDs and PowerPoint and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's there's lots of different inputs. We're hooked. It's obviously hooked to the internet. There's kind of there'll be so much more product available. There'll be we can you know, look at doing some classic films. And sure. As far as I know, I haven't really delved into that yet. And like you said, we can just put a laptop up there, and you can do PowerPoint and DVDs and, you know, slideshows and.
Oh yeah, I just see a company doing their sales meeting there. You know, they could very easily do that. The technology, I can't believe. You know, you mentioned the 1947 projector. That's the size of a field artillery piece, and we moved that to this side. And then here's a much smaller unit for projection. Then you had what I would call a cartridge. And you said every version of that film is on that cartridge. Is that right?
Yeah, it comes like in a the size of a brick, I guess.
Yeah.
I would call it. It's a drive that has, and then they have all the versions of the movie on there. So sometimes there's, you know, six or eight versions.
Well, they have the 3D version.
Yeah,
all that, right? It's a marvelous technology, and now
you download the one that works for you.
Yeah, that's right.
We have 5.1 sound, you know, but some of the fancier theaters, you know, they have 7.1. Which a sound system, and then of course there's the 2D and the 3D, and then there's closed captioning and open captioning.
You know what I would like to see on Scandinavian Days? You play a regular modern movie with Norwegian subtitles.
Yeah,
wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Well, Todd,
yeah,
you know,
you got to be careful when you put that drive in. You got to make sure you pick the right movies.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Look, Lena, it's a film for us.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that Todd Thorson. Well, I'll tell you what, we've had a lot of fun talking today. Congratulations on the installation of the new digital technology, and with the acknowledgement that the famous Story City Opera House has been open without interruption since 1913. Todd Thorson, a person who's renewed and sustained that tradition, and now we move into the 21st century with digital films and technology. Thank you very much, Todd. We'll be talking to you as things develop.
Sounds good. Thanks, Paul.
All right.
Susan.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in the counties in our listening area. Today, we're focusing on Story County, just north of Ames. I'm Susan Franzen, and a co-host of this program is Paul Wearson, who just interviewed Abby Huff, the new director of the Story City Greater Chamber Connection, and has been talking with Todd Thorson, owner of the Story City Grand Opera House, about the historic farewell to the old projector and the possibilities that will come with a new digital projector and projection system and speakers. Now I'm excited to introduce Delon Thompson, who I learned about from Todd Thorson's front page article in the Story City Herald. The article mentioned that Delon was an internationally famous country music singer living in Tucson, although he grew up in Roland. And it just happened that I was planning a trip down to Tucson to visit my son and his family a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, wow, what a chance to take a little special road trip for Local Talk while I'm down there. And I guess you at least knew of Delon when he was growing up.
See, now the school system is Roland Story. Back in those days, it was Story City and Roland separate. And my brother had to play against Gary Thompson in basketball. And that was not a good thing for him because Gary became not only an all-state star in basketball, but also one of the great players of all time at Iowa State. And he played also in the professional league, and he's in the oil and gas business here in town, and so he's been very successful. Delon was his brother, and Delon was a very good baseball player, and I sort of lost track of Delon since my days in Story City. You know, so many people grow up and then branch out and leave, and Delon was one of these folks.
Yes, and he has a song about that, and I'd like to play that first to introduce the interview that I had. Actually, I had an hour and a half interview, so this is going to be just a few bits, and I wanted to include some of the songs.
Oh. A few years back, I was born in this town. As I grew up, I started looking around. I just knew I had to get away from here. There's so much stuff going on out there. When I come of age and I start to fly, I'm gonna knock around this world until I die. In the summertime when I was a kid, I played a lot of baseball, that's what I did. I wasn't old enough to work very much, hanging at the station drinking Pepsi and nuts. When I come of age and I start to fly, I'm gonna knock around this world until I die. There's a lot to be said for towns this small, but I had to answer my internal call. So many things to see across this nation. I want my life to be a celebration of all those things that I plan to do. When I come of age, it will see me through. Through high school and college, I was biding my time, following rules and trying to toe their lines, but working real hard to get that college degree, when all I ever wanted was just to be free. When I come of age and I start to fly, I'm gonna knock around this world until I die.
Played all 4 years, except back at that day, the freshmen weren't eligible to play on the varsity, so we had to wait till our sophomore year, and then I lettered all 3 years at Iowa State University. I graduated in 1964.
What did you do after that?
Well, I had achieved my goal, and I signed a bonus contract with the Minnesota Twins organization and then left Iowa to play in my first season of professional baseball in the minor leagues. I played that season. That was in the Northern League, and our home team that I was with was up in Bismarck, North Dakota. And then the next season, I went to spring training down in Florida, and they assigned me to Wisconsin Rapids, a team in Wisconsin, and that was a part of the Midwest League, and we played the whole season there. That was in 1965.
Well, that looks like a pretty good beginning to a career. What happened?
Well, I had that second year was the first full year that I played, and I had a really, really good season. As a pitcher, my stats were just excellent. One of the big chiefs of the Minnesota Twins during the midseason, he was quoted in a newspaper as saying that I was one of the top prospects in their whole organization. But at the end of the season, just several things happens in the baseball, and it was a system that wasn't compatible with the values that I was taught growing up. And the Minnesota Twins at that time were owned by the Griffith family, and it was a business for them. It wasn't an investment like so many of the ball clubs are nowadays. And I had a great season, and they gave me a $25 a month pay raise for the next season. We were expecting our first child, and when you only get paid for the months you play baseball, $25 a month pay raise for an excellent season wasn't very much. That was one of the reasons. The other reasons were just the lifestyle of living on the road and different ball players. They come from all over the country. They weren't raised like I was in central Iowa in a little farming community, and guys were chasing around on their wives, on their fiancés, and it just wasn't a lifestyle that I was comfortable with. So I walked away from baseball, and I've never been sad, even though I always felt I could have made it to the major leagues.
So what did you do then?
Well, there were some people in the hometown area there that were after me to work with them in an insurance company, and so I went to work with them in the insurance company because I guess they figured my name might be recognized around, get me in some doors or that kind of stuff. And I did work for the insurance company for a couple of 3 years. But that was back in the days when they only paid you your commissions for what you sold, and they were monthly commissions. So, again, it was very difficult trying to support a family with a new baby and all of those things when you weren't getting paid your full commissions, except you'd finally get it at the end of the year.
How did you get along?
Well, I did a lot of other things. I bought and sold some things, and, you know, I guess typical, like the yard sale type of thing, that, you know, those things just to augment the income from that standpoint. I did win a trip with the insurance company, and so that was good. And then after that, I went to work with General Foods Corporation as a district representative for them, and we moved to Mason City, Iowa, spent a couple years there.
You mentioned earlier that your wife worked in...
Carroll, Iowa. She was a teacher. She also graduated from Iowa State University.
And did she, was this before the baby was born, or did she go back to work after the
baby? That was before the baby was born, right. And then she only taught a half a year there because we had to, and that was their understanding, and we had to leave then for Florida for spring training.
How many years were you in the insurance business in Central Iowa?
I was in there from, it would have been 1965 to about 1967, I guess it was. And then I left the insurance company because it just wasn't, the renewals weren't just adding up fast enough for me at that time. And the old insurance industry was, if you could suffer through and make it 5 or 6 years and did a lot of business, the renewals would add up and then you would have that automatic monthly income. And you know how it is when you're young. Haste. You want to get there now. You can't wait for 5, 6 years for things to develop. And so I moved on and got a better job, increased the amount of money that I was making. And
okay. Well, that sort of gives you a flavor of the ups and downs after leaving Roland. And as I mentioned at the beginning, the reason that I interviewed DeLon was that at age 54, he began a career in music, in traditional country music, or what he calls classic country music. And now 54, I can guess, have some feeling for that because he's just your age, Paul.
Yes, he is.
And so this was obviously... I left him when he was still in his 20s. So there are a few more ups and downs between that. But in fact, you sort of expect some rough times with a country music singer. But one of the things that DeLon said in his beginning song, When I Come of Age, was he wanted to go places and do things. And he had a very unusual period of about 20 years where he was a traveling evangelist. And here's the little bit about how he got started in that.
There was an itinerant evangelistic group that came to Peoria, Illinois. And I was off for 2 days in the middle of the week, and I came back to work, and I was sitting up in our cafeteria at this big store that I was working in. I was a merchandise manager there and had responsibility for about $5-6 million worth of sales in specific departments. And we were sitting there talking, and they said, "Did you hear about the guys that got arrested here at the shopping mall yesterday?" And I said, "Well, no, I was not working here." And they said, "Well, there's a couple of them right over there." And I'm looking around, and they said, back in those days, they called them Jesus freaks because they were long hairs and that kind of stuff. And they said, "Well, there's a couple guys right over there in the cafeteria." And I'm looking around. I said, "I don't see any long-haired people over there." And they said, "Well, those two guys right there. Well, they look just like me. They look like businessmen." And to make a long story short, which we can do that here now, I had to go answer a phone call, and I kept my eyes on those two guys. And they started walking out, and I put my hand up, and they stopped. And I hung up the phone, and I said, "I want to ask you guys some questions." So I found out about this evangelistic ministry that they were a part of. One was a principal of a school. He and his wife and children had left and joined this ministry. And another one was a businessman, and he and his wife and a couple of children had left and joined the ministry. And the man that was the principal and his wife, they formed a school. And at this time, they had about 200 people traveling with this mobile ministry. And so that was really something that I was interested in, because just 2 years prior to that, which was 2 years after my father had died, I decided that I wanted to be a Christian. I'd been a churchgoer all my life, but I really wanted to live a Christian life. Well, they had this big tent that they set up on the fairgrounds, and they invited me to come out to a couple of the meetings. My wife and I did at that time. And I really liked the message. And I always thought, well, you know, long-haired hippie people around the 60s, 70s and stuff, that was not me by any stretch of the imagination. But these people were so full of love, they were so interesting to talk to and listen to, and then what they were doing was spending their every single day out working in the community with churches, working with nursing homes, working in the hospitals, visiting prisons, those types of things. And of course, then we would assemble at nighttime where I had attended the meetings in the tent, and it would be like a good old-fashioned tent revival. And, well, we joined the ministry and caught up with them in Nashville, Tennessee.
For those of you who are tuning in late, we have been listening to an interview that I did with DeLon Thompson, the internationally acclaimed classic singer-songwriter from Roland for country music, whom I visited in Tucson while I was in Arizona a couple weeks ago. From the recent article in the Story City Herald, all I knew when I met him was that he started his singing career at when he was 54. Naturally, the question that occurred to me was what he was doing before that and how he got started. And now I'll go back to what he told about how Skeeter Davis, a very famous country music singer, was his mentor.
My contact in Nashville happened while I was in the evangelistic ministry. I met a lady named Skeeter Davis, who was a member of the Grand Ole Opry, and we became friends at that time, not so much during the years I was in the ministry, but later on. And I got to talk with her. Well, again, to make this long story short, I told Skeeter that someday I wanted to be able to do music just here in Tucson, and my primary focus was going to be taking gospel music and some country music out to the assisted care living homes, people that can't really get out and about by themselves, and go to these places and just let them hear some music and have a little fun for maybe an hour, hour and a half out of their day. And that's the way I started for the first year or two. And so when in 1996, I was traveling, coming back from Washington, D.C. through Nashville, and I stopped there to visit my oldest daughter who lived in Nashville with her family. And while I was sitting in her house, this is the time I'm going to call Skeeter. Why am I waiting? So I called Skeeter and told her that I had songs that I'd like to record. She introduced me to John Reese, who became my keyboard player, my music arranger, my producer of the albums on all the albums we've done. And that's what started my music career. And originally I went to Nashville just to record some songs so that I could take them and pitch them, hoping somebody famous would record them, because there's a lot of money to be made in songwriting. And I figured since I like to be involved in ministry work, that would be great, you know, to have somebody famous do them. I'd have more money to give away to do things with as far as ministry work out here in Arizona. So after we recorded the first six songs, John said, you know, he said, with a lot of practice and continuing practice, instead of just what you're doing, occasionally singing at a church, he said, you could develop your voice where you could be a recording artist. You wouldn't have to just be a songwriter. At first I was thinking, well, is this the come on, you know? But I knew John was a born-again Christian also, because that's why Skeeter had worked with him. And so I asked him a lot of different questions, and I said, really? I said, are you thinking that? And he said, yes. He said, just continue practice, develop, strengthen that voice box, strengthen those vocal cords, sing at home, do things like that. And so here we are, 20 years later, and I've been on the resort circuit for about 16 of those 20 years. And it's been a marvelous experience.
How do you support yourself?
I went into the recording studio in 1996, and by 1999, my music was self-supporting.
One of the things, though, about his songs is that his gospel music, his gospel recordings, and incidentally, he gave me two gospel records and our CDs and five country. So he separated the music out, except depending on his appropriate live audience. But his songs really do reflect the values that he grew up with. and they are not necessarily autobiographical. I'd like to start with Crazy Country Boy, which he'll tell a little bit about.
I've always enjoyed writing songs that paint a story. I like to write love songs. I like to write story songs. I like to write songs that make people feel good. And when it comes to writing lyrics for songs, like a lot of people would think that probably I've been through a lot of the different things, but you'll be inspired by different things. Like the first song that I ever charted overseas was a song that was called Crazy Country Boy. And that was on my first album. And that I was just driving down from Washington, D.C. to Nashville, Tennessee. I drove through the Carolinas, and something inspired me to write a story about a guy coming from the Carolinas into Nashville.
Yes, my folk around here tell me that I should go to the city to make a name on the radio. Well, I guess I'm just a crazy country boy, and at last I've found my lifelong joy. For when I pass through old Kentucky on that day, and I met a little girl named Darla Mae. Have passed, and folks around here know I passed up the chance to play on the radio. Yes, I may have lost a fortune and some fame, but I've still got my darla, she wears my name. Well, we've had some kids and all are grown but one. He's a banjo playing, picking son of a gun. He's already asking to go to play on the radio. Someday I hope he'll say, Dad, I found a better way.
Well, there's a little fantasy in that because he, in fact, was on his way to try to play on the radio. And his marriage of 20 years or so had broken up. So he wasn't with Donna LaMay or whoever his first wife had been. And he had a new life, was starting a new life. And it turned out that this was a really good thing for him, because as he became established in Tucson, he rediscovered another love of his youth, baseball. When he was 60, he became eligible for the seniors team. Now he plays faithfully every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. We had trouble scheduling because between his baseball and the last gig of his season, the high season in Tucson, of course, for music, is going to be in the winter, when he gets to meet a lot of his old acquaintances and schoolmates and friends from Iowa who come down there.
That's right, all the snowbirds.
That's right. And the country music is just the right thing because actually he came in at a very interesting time, and I think that I have a cut on that in this next audio that will introduce Old Country, New Country. Which is the song that deals with, he came in just at the end of traditional country music. They weren't playing it in Nashville except when the greats came back, like Skeeter Davis. And so I'd like to hear that next cut.
I wrote Old Country, New Country, which became a number one song on the overseas charts. And I wrote that song because about the mid-1990s, was the end of what we call classic country music. And classic country music, it generally starts with Eddie Arnold, Jim Reeves in the late 1950s, Ray Price in that era of time, and extends up to about the mid-1990s with Alan Jackson, George Strait. In the mid-1990s, this new wave of music started coming in. And they called it this, they called it that, all kinds of different things. So I thought, well, I'm going to write a song about old country, the kind that I like, the classical sounds of country, and new country, and just try to bridge the gap between the two of them, you know, because I'm not much in favor of the new kind of country music. There's some of it that I like, but I really like the old kind of music because it does what I do. It tells stories. It paints love songs. It makes people feel good with a lot of the songs. I personally don't write music about adultery, getting drunk, landing in jail, and all that kind of stuff like that they associate with country music of the old days. But the new song, new country music, they refer to it as contemporary. And it's got a strong beat to it. They're not reaching out to people that are 40 years of age and older. They're reaching for the young kids because they've got the beat. They've got repetition. They just keep repeating the same lyrics over and over and over again. And you call it a song. And very few of the artists nowadays actually paint the stories. So that's all that was about, was to stop all the bickering. Let us be happy with classical country or regular country, traditional country music, whatever term we want to call it, and let the people be happy with the contemporary.
Old country, new country, will radio play their songs? Come on, everybody, why can't you all just get along? Back in the 60s, the twang sounds left behind. Now we're in the 20s and country's doing just fine. Everything keeps changing, but we all can still have fun. Old country, new country, keeping it number one. A house divided against itself is headed for a fall. It's time for old and new to say, together we'll stand tall. Old country, new country, what's it all about? Me, I'm an oldie, but I'm still gonna sing and shout. Cowboy hats and cowboy boots, sexy evening gowns. Pick 'em up trucks and limousines, or a grand night on the town. Old country, new country, will radio play their songs? Come on, everybody, why can't you all just get along? Legends come and legends go, they've all had their hour. It's people with the money who always have the power. If you're true to your roots and the music's in your soul, keep writing your songs traditional or country rock and roll. The country sound has gone to rocking in the bars, but still you can hear the sounds of a sweet steel guitar. So old country, new country, songs both new and old. Times they are a-changing, but it's still pure country gold.
Well, this has been fun today. That was DeLon Thompson, Old Country, New Country, and I'm really happy to be acquainted with his music today. We'll have to hear more of that on our own. Well, you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people's stories and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Paul Wearson and Susan Franson. We started the show today with Abby Huff, the new director of the Story City Greater Chamber of Commerce. And we talked about the changes that digital projection will bring to the Story City Grand Opera House with Todd Thorson.
Then we heard songs and stories from the Roland native DeLon Thompson as he told them to me from his present home in Tucson, Arizona.
And remember that Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. And, of course, there you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook, of course, and get updates on all our new show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Richard Morrison. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was DeLon Thompson singing his songs, When I Come of Age and Old Country, New Country from the CD Git, and Crazy Country Boy from the CD DeLon Traditional Country.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. And if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. Now that number again is 515-292-2878. Or we can also contact us through our website, khoyfm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again
on the radio.